This conference is being recorded.
This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network. You're listening to Loving the Earth, Pollution Free Rising. Tonight joining us from Ottawa is Albert Dumont, a Algonquin, a Native American elder. Good evening, Albert.
Good evening, Don. How are you tonight?
I'm great, and just wonderful to, you know, be on the line with you to talk about water and water pollution and the Ottawa River and all these important parts of our environment. Just introduce yourself some for the new listeners, Albert.
Okay. My name is Albert Dumont, Oshki Noden Nini. I was born in Kitiganzebe, which is an Algonquin reservation just near the town of Maniwaki in Quebec, and it's 100 miles north of the city of Ottawa. And even though they were known as Algonquins, my ancestors were the people of the Great River, and the people of the Great River honored and respected that river, which is known to everyone today as the Ottawa River. But it was just simply called the Great River by my ancestors, and because it provided for them in everything. It looked after them the way a mother would look after her children, and that's why we honor that river today.
I'm sure that's a big part of why, you know, you have your writing and your thinking and your doing, your activism, that's, you know, involved with water and water quality protection and, you know, what we're going to be talking about tonight. And it's, you surely have a beautiful kind of start on all that, being one of the people of the Great River. So let's talk about what are some of your special experiences, what are some of your special ideas, and maybe you would want to read some poetry at this time. What is it, you know, that you connect with about water that's, you know, special in your experience of life?
Well, we have responsibilities where the indigenous peoples are expected to be keepers of the earth by Great Spirit. And so because we take that instruction seriously, well, then we do everything we can. Our prayers are always for the health of not only the human beings, but also the birds and the trees and the four-legged and the crawlers and, of course, the water. I've got a poem here that I wrote quite a while ago, and it was, I call this poem, "I Have Seen in a Dream." I have seen in a dream that place from which the sacred water spilled, and life-giving raindrops urged the fruit trees to blossom as the plan of our Creator willed. I have seen in a dream that place from which Michomas sang his song of honor for the lifeblood of Mother Earth, and to quench his thirst with fresh and clear water was his right from birth. I have seen in a dream that place from which the heartbeat of the drum rose above the roar of the greatest falls, and prayer and promise were in harmony with the sound of a loon's call. But awakened, I lament for our sons and daughters. When I see the things pollution kills, I weep, for I've seen in a dream that place from which the sacred water spilled. And that's the poem that I wrote for water.
It's a very beautiful poem, and it brings to mind an experience I had once up on the Rupert River in Quebec. My brother David and I were camping up there, and there is a large falls on the Rupert near where we, you know, started our canoe trip. And the portage that we were, the particular portage and the campsite that we were at, you could hear that falls, off far in the distance. It wasn't very loud, but you could hear it constantly. And what was strange that about our experience, and what's striking and makes, you know, my memory of it so important to me, is that once during all the many times that we have camped there and when, you know, spent days and days in that particular place, we heard the sound of a waterfall, and then we also heard a drumming sound and this chanting type sound. It, you know, just seemed like that it was something that was supernatural, something spiritual, you know, and we were concerned about the river being dammed and hydro development taking place on that river, and we are not certain what it meant, but it was something that we remember. And like that line, the line in the poem when you say about the sound of the waterfall and the sound of the drum, just reminded me so powerfully of that experience.
Well, if ever you need a place, like a healing place, I would urge anyone to go to where there's falls and rapids, and you will hear sometimes, you might hear chatter, you might hear people speaking. It won't be clear what the words are, but you'll know that it's people that are speaking. And we believe that that's definitely a spirit that's communicating their presence at these sacred places where there's water. And some people will even say that it's the little people, these, you know, that are supernatural. And they are part of our lore, and they're important. We really believe in these little people. They're very tiny, and some people believe in them so much that when they go to where there's waterfalls, they bring gifts for them, like buttons and thread and cloth and tobacco and things like that for the little people.
A beautiful belief. Now, when you have before spoken with me about water and, you know, how important it is to life, you quickly, you know, moved on into this talking about the Ottawa River and it being important to you, and the polluting of the river and the need for this to change and the river to be, you know, protected and come back to being a river of healthy water. Because, you know, the pollution is no longer there, poisoning the water and the animals and the plants that live there. Can you share with us some of the things that have happened in your life and in Ottawa and with the river? Is anything changing? Is it getting worse? Is it, you know, is there any activism, you know, to, you know, help the river at this time?
Yes. Whenever I was a boy, you could still scoop up a handful of water from the Ottawa and drink it, and it was good. It was good to drink. I think that if you did that today, that you might break out in sores or a rash or something, because it's very, very polluted. There's sewage spills all the time, chemical spills, and they've always got excuses, the companies that do that. But I believe that this pollution causes cancers in people, because our body needs water, and the human beings need water to live, like everything else that's alive. And if the water we're drinking is poison, well, then it creates cancer. And that's what I definitely believe. People don't drink enough pure water. They drink it in stuff that's polluted, and it's enough to kill people if they take too much of it. There's a group called Friends of the Ottawa River. I have I've never contacted that group, but I have I pray for the Ottawa River, for the water all the time, and for the I do everything I can for the to bring the health of the river back again, because whenever whenever there's no more water, fresh water, good water to drink, we'll all die, and that's a fact. The water is going to run out at some point, and what's going to be left, you know, we're going to be like a third world country, where the third world countries are now, I don't know what's going to be left of them at that time, but we're not heading for a good place. We need to get another understand about spirituality more, and then the health of the land will come back, I'm sure.
I believe that it can come back. I agree with you on that. And when you say that we need to just become more spiritual, you know, to grow spiritually, to look more to spirituality, what's the first step? You know, how can people start doing that?
I think we need to believe again in the circle and what the circle represents. When human beings sit in a circle to pray or to ask for healing, there's already a healing energy that comes about whenever human beings are sitting in a circle, and that's where to begin, I think, and make their plan or speak their words of or their prayers for the health of the environment. And they need to walk softly on the earth and to understand about the seasons. Like right now it's winter, and underneath the snow Mother Earth is sleeping, and she's dreaming, and those dreams are filtering up and coming into the wind, so to speak. And if the human beings, especially those ones that are born at this time of the year, they reap of that energy, and they are special about, they understand about spirituality, and those people that are born in the winter time are good people to have in your circle whenever you're making going to communicate your prayers or your hopes. It's someone who's born in winter time. It's special.
Well, I'm happy to say that I was born in on the 30th of November, and I've not really into winter yet, but it's starting close to that.
Yeah.
And I feel that, you know, I agree with you. It seems to be, I always think of the winter time. It is strange because, see, I hadn't heard that belief of yours before, but I've always thought of the winter time as this most spiritual of times. It just seems like there's something intense about it, and it focuses people on light and you know, the lack of light and how wonderful light is.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it's this time when it's very suited to thinking spiritual thoughts and like focusing on being higher somehow. I think with my medicine wheel, I do this medicine wheel dancing, and I always think of the northern part of the medicine wheel as being white, and that being of the north and the snow and the winter and, you know, the white colors that we see of clouds and mists and those kinds of things. And I always think of that as being spiritual and leading me in this. See, like when I'm dancing the northern part of the medicine wheel, I feel like that's the really spiritual, most spiritual part of the dancing, you know.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
My experiences with water, the first environmental activism I got into was air pollution. It was a proposal to build a county-wide solid waste incinerator, burn trash and put a lot of pollution out, and we opposed that. But then the second big issue that I got involved with was an Superfund EPA designated hazardous waste dumping site in the township of Lisbon, near the little hamlet of Lisbon. And it was only about, you know, maybe a couple miles from, probably less than 2 miles away, the crow flies, from where we live in the St. Lawrence River Valley. And once I learned about that, I started trying to understand what chemicals had been dumped there, and, you know, where they were, whether they were in water, how they would be, you know, affecting the environment, to the extent that they might be coming to where I was, because we had a drilled well. And I talked to hydrogeologists, and they said that pretty much in general, the underground water near large rivers tended to move toward the river. And so I was right smack between our wells, or straight between the site, this dump, and the St. Lawrence River. So there were some issues with concern about our own water, and we had to test it, and it didn't appear that anything had reached there. But I had people that I had gone to high school with, and I started talking to them about this dump, and they said to me it was very striking. That was the water was the connection with them. They lived within maybe no more than a tenth of a mile of this dumping site. They called it a disposal pit. There was no liner. Our liner was required, but no liner was there. They just dug a hole in the ground, and it was full of water because it was near a swamp. And they dumped chemicals there. They put barrels of chemicals in them into there. And this guy that I was talking to, this high school friend, he said that when EPA started drilling, that's the Environmental Protection Agency here in the U.S., the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, when they started drilling wells around this pond, this pool of waste, to determine how far out the waste had migrated in the groundwater, his drinking water that he got from a spring immediately changed and became very bad smelling, and just would leave a blue residue on the cooking utensils. When you boil that water and cooked vegetables, there'll be some blue color there. And it was all, new and bad, for his family there. And the horrible thing is that for some reason they kept drinking the stuff. They needed the water and they just kept drinking it. Kind of like the way some probably still use the Ottawa River water even though it's being poisoned. And so that was a really big thing with me. That was the first time that I really spent a lot of time. I would spend hours and hours every day working on that. I call it this Sealand site. It was called Sealand. It was a strange name. They called it the Sealand Restoration Site. It turned out to really truly be the Sealand Hazardous Waste Dumping Site. So that was an interesting experience, and that was when I fully became a very steady and constantly working environmental activist. And it's just, the water is so special and important. I was so concerned about, just having these chemicals in our water and then possibly, getting sick from that. And this Moncrief family, which was the family that was there that I was describing, his wife had a miscarriage. They had children that weren't all that healthy. Dale Moncrief, the father that I knew, he had awful headaches. He had this rash on his body. And we tried to get the New York State Department of Health to help out and carefully study whether there were, chemicals in his water. And it was a difficult matter because truly to test for chemicals in water, it's not a simple thing. You don't just test the water and find out what chemicals are in it. You have to start off looking for every specific chemical that you do a test for. You have to know the chemical you're looking for before you do the test and before you find it. So it's, how are they going to figure out what chemicals to look for? Well, this hazardous waste dumping was done in the middle of the midnight, and, there's some records, but very, sketchy. And so the New York State Department of Health didn't help. And eventually EPA provided some bottled water for these people, and then they took it away from them after a while. And it was just kind of concern-raising and disappointing and bad. And I always feel like these people had a really bad experience, and they're very, unhappy about how that all went. So I can understand you fully when you talk about the Ottawa River and how you used to be able to drink from it and how that's no more. And yet, hopefully, someday it can be turned around. And it is, I'm sure, a lot by people's prayers and by environmental activism. What I really believe needs to be happen now, along with the spirituality, and I think the spirituality would probably bring this about, maybe it's the only way it can be brought about. I believe that our governments, both in the U.S. and Canada, in many countries, they just come to the point where they're so controlled by the big money that these corporations have that they basically either do what the corporation tells them to do or they avoid doing what they know the corporation doesn't want them to do. It's a combination of both, I'm sure. So do you see any role for spirituality in somehow helping the people get back the kind of government they need to have a healthy environment?
Well, I do, because eventually, when things begin to die and the water becomes even too poisoned, that filtration will hardly do anything to make it more pure. I think at that point, if hopefully it'll never come to that, but if it ever does, I think that's the only way that some people will finally realize that they need to do something that will bring the health of the water back, and spirituality will do that. When we were given instructions by God to for rituals and ceremonies that we should do to communicate our prayers to the spirits, and the land and the water will respond to those requests, because that's the way God intended it. I wrote a poem called I Call to the Land. I'd like to read that there now.
Okay.
I call to the land my wish that I never more be alone, and that my heart be carried on noble wing to memories of the good times I have known, and that the walkers on a straight trail afford me calm when my eyes and premonitions fail, and that the swimmers who never touch the shore bestow assurances of water forevermore, and that the crawlers on their journey of soft caress relate to Mother Earth the feelings which I express. I call to the land. I wrote that because the calling to the land is our prayers, and we need to understand again that we should kindle a fire, just a small fire, and sit around that fire and in a circle, and with people who are as one in their purpose, and they if we do that, we will it's a good start to bring health back to the water and to the land. I think if more and more people did that throughout the Americas, whether it's in the United States or Canada, or in the deepest points north or the deepest points south, and this side of the ocean anyways, or hopefully all over the world, but we should be doing leading the way here in the Americas, so that the rest of the world will see that it's not something foolish, that it's something serious and good to do.
You counseled, you advised, you instructed, kind of guided Dave and I once, many times really, and we have done that. You had said to sit by a fire together, and then this circle, and then give prayers to our ancestors, asking them to come and help with issues that we've been involved in. And it's wonderful. It's just a good vibe and a very wonderful thing to do. Once you mentioned to me a ceremony that was a way of starting the day with water. Can you share that with the listeners now?
Yes. What I often do, I try to do it every day, and what I do is I bring, I put water in a basin, and then I bring it up with my hands over my face. And I begin with my mind, and I request good thoughts and the power of the healing words to enter into my thoughts throughout the day. And then I bring the water up, and I rub my eyes with that water, and then I give words of speak words of thanksgiving that I can see, because a lot of people cannot see because of disease, or they're born with a birth defect or something and they're blind. So I'm grateful that I can see. And then I'm also grateful for the sights that I see, whether it's the faces of my daughters or the old people in my community. smell the aromas and the fragrances and the land and all the whatever it is that somebody has prepared, a feast or whatever, and I'm grateful that I can smell that, because a lot of people cannot because of their birth defect or whatever. And then I bring the water up to my ears and I speak words of thanksgiving that I can hear, because I like to hear the voices of my children and the songs of the people and the songs of the birds and the calls of the animals in the forest. And some people, they cannot hear, so I'm grateful that I can, and it's important for me to acknowledge that. We don't take anything for granted. And then I bring the water up and I taste it and I drink it, and I'm thankful that it's there to keep me alive, because I would surely die if I didn't drink water every day. And the body cannot last very long without water. And then I'm also give thanks that I can speak and that I can taste, and that I have the ability that my voice is heard from my loved ones, that I need to counsel them or to communicate words of remorse or joy or whatever the occasion might call for. So I don't take that for granted, because some people cannot speak. And I'm an activist, and I'm grateful that I can speak for others that are afraid to speak for themselves, and so I don't take that for granted. And that's what I try to do every day, is begin my day by doing that.
Well, that's a great way to start the day, and I do it. I had not been doing it indoors. It's a little spring that I get water to, you know, wash myself and vegetables and the things we eat, fruit and apples and this type of thing. And when I would get that water, I would put the water on my eyes and the different parts of my face and think, you know, thankful thoughts. And it's kind of cool the way, I don't think you had told me about starting with your mind the other times we talked, and when you shared doing this ceremony. But that's where I always start. I always start with my mind and my brain and my head, you know, and my brain, really, and thinking about hoping that is, you know, well and does what I've learned that it can do. And I just love thinking beautiful thoughts and, you know, using thinking to do things that need to be done. And so it is, and maybe I will start doing it indoors now, because I had to stop doing it outdoors because it's getting a little too cold.
Yeah.
And it's like I was doing it right up till when it was darn cold, and then I just stopped, and I'll have to start it up again indoors now with the basin and the water like that. Tell me, as far as hope for the future, you know, you think, and I agree with you, that spirituality has a way of leading people to a better place. Is there any, you know, have you seen any signs that would cause you to believe that it's not going to get horribly, you know, poisoned and bad before people change and, you know, correct these problems? Are you hopeful that it won't have to get any worse, and that we're actually already beginning to, you know, protect water and change our behaviors and have a healthy earth?
Well, I believe that anyone who loves the earth and respects and honors the forest and the waterways and the air, I believe that such a person, should there ever be a catastrophe, concerning the poisons and the sicknesses that are loose in the winds and in the water, well, I think the people who've always loved the land, I think that the spirit will lift them up, so that their health won't be affected by what's that where others will suffer. You know, I believe that, because those people who always loved the earth and honored and respected those things, I don't think that they need to worry. It's those people who don't care, who take everything for granted, and the expect the politicians and science to fix everything, and they don't have, they don't feel that spirituality is important. I think those people are going to if there's going to be a catastrophe, I think it's those people that will be harmed, and it's because they've turned their back on spirituality. They've turned their back on the other beings that are alive, whether it's the winged beings or the four-legged beings or the crawlers or the swimmers. We need to respect that God didn't put those things on this earth as a joke. As a matter of fact, all those other things, the trees and everything else, would do very well without us. But human beings need those things to live, and yet we treat them so badly, and that's the problem. And I know that for me, as a grandfather, I teach my granddaughter and any other grandchildren I'm going to have, I teach them to love the planet, and that the planet, the forest and the water are just important in their lives as I am. And that's what I teach them, and I think if everybody taught that to their children, well, the next generation then would love the earth, and pollution just wouldn't be tolerated the way it is today.
Yeah, it's just so, it's striking, you know, it's kind of shocking is the right way to describe it, you know, how far things have gotten. Sometimes I'll just think, how can we just let the poisoning continue when we know about it now, and we know that it's bad, and that it's causing horrible diseases like cancer, and some of these other chronic diseases also, like diabetes and Alzheimer's disease and all these different horrible diseases that happen to people now, and then they don't get to have a happy, healthy old age, and sometimes not even a happy, healthy, you know, young part of their life. It just feels like that something just should be done immediately, and that we should just, like, just bring it in, you know, just by whatever means is necessary to this poisoning. And yet I feel really strongly, I feel very strongly that violence does not have a part in bringing these changes. And so, you know, in the past, you know, some of the big changes that took place and where power was taken away from bad people were violent type changes. You know, people had to pretty much take up arms and, you know, one kind or another, and just force the change upon the bad part of, you know, the society. And I don't believe in that, and I want to stay away from it, and I'm hoping that spirituality and good clear-mindedness and activism and loving the earth and loving people and loving good health and clean water and fresh air and clean you know, land and clean food, those things, the love and the honoring and the caring, that'll somehow, I believe in this, it's this spiritual thing of people rising, you know, people being more tomorrow than they were yesterday, and then being more and more and more, and living on a higher level, and it being a spiritual level and a mindful thinking, poetry writing, you know, dancing, loving the earth kind of level of being, rather than just buying stuff and somehow existing with this materialism. I don't know, I don't see a lot of it happening, but it's happening in my life, and I know some people that it's happening with, and I'm sure it's happening elsewhere, and I like to believe, my happiest thought, what I feel joy in, when I feel this concern for the earth, is that this is the beginning, that we are at this special time that will be better than maybe the Renaissance or the Great Golden Age or any of these times, when people would just somehow come to the point where they realize the need for the spirituality and this going to a higher level, and they would just rise and rise spiritually and become more spiritual, and then be able to live in this way where the poisoning ends, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sure you're a beautiful part of this. Every time I call you when I have issues that come up and I need your guidance, you always have these beautiful I wouldn't say suggestions, just much more this guiding into, you know, this knowledge that you share, that's advice more than suggestion, and even more than advice, it's just guidance about spiritual matters that make it possible to be okay with any kind of, you know, thing happening in our lives. So what you're saying here about the prayers of the people and the caring about the land and all these things that are going to help it turn out all right, it's it's very consoling and feels like a part of what I'm hoping is happening with this spiritual rising and this environmental changes. I call it a spiritual environmental global revolution, and I love the word revolution, except it may have a little bit of a, some people would think of it as possible violence involved in it, and I'm hoping that people would not fear that and not be concerned about that, because we do need a big change, and that's what I call revolution.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is wonderful. Do you have any other poetry you'd like to share, or have you read the ones you want to read?
For people to know about my my website.
Okay.
And Albert Dumont, it's World Wide Web, albertdumont.com.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe that's Dumont, D-U-M-O-N-T. And maybe at some point you can just to let people know that I've written a book of trees and their wisdom. But
that was
anyways,
a beautiful book.
Yeah, and this poem is called The Old Man. In the darkness, I lay myself down. In the darkness, I know where I am bound. I close my eyes to darkness the same. I close my eyes and I see him again. He visits me often, but I know not his name. He visits me often to comfort my pain. His wrinkles are deep as though cut with a knife. His wrinkles are deep, they speak of his life. He wears skins of deer he has honored. He wears skins embroidered and flowered. He does not speak, but tells me many things. He does not speak, yet relates his beginnings. The old man is my grandfather, who lived thousands of moons ago. The old man is my grandfather, who comes to tell me the things I must know. So I wrote that because dreams are special, and whether you're, if you're at a fasting site, for instance, or you're at a place of ceremony and you sleep there, and that all those things that will come to you concerning prayers and how to bring health to the land, it's all going to be that ancestor that's communicated that to you. It's that old man that comes to you, and or that old woman that comes and. You don't see them, but you know that they're there because they're the ones who put that message. They give you that message, and people shouldn't be afraid of that. Some people, they'll sit at a fasting site, for instance, and they'll have their little fire going, and that fire, it might light up maybe about 15, a circle of about 15 feet in diameter, and beyond that. Area that's lit up is complete blackness, and they're afraid of what's in there. To me, it's the darkness is just part of the land, and we're not allowing ourselves to even though it's nighttime and we can't see it, just to know that it's there should be comforting.
Yes.
But people are afraid, and I don't understand that.
Yeah. They've been broken away. They've broken their relationship with the earth, and there's fear in that, I'm sure. I look at what you're saying is just exactly right on with me. I love the night. It just feels good to be out in the forest at night, and it's just a beautiful part of life and the earth. And well, Albert, thanks so much for talking with me. And, both on the record and off the record, you're a great guide in the spirit you know, the spiritual life, and you know, a great elder, and you know, you've helped so many people. You've helped me, and you've been it's cool the way that you help me by telling me stories about other people you've helped, and just kind of weave that helping between what you've done in the past and what you're doing right in the moment with speaking with me. So, you know, be, you know, just good fortune and good health to you, Albert.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks a lot.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
Bye.